Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm your host, Rory West, and on the podcast I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Hello, everyone.
So, what we're doing this week is the first of our weekend sort of recaps, first time since, March it would have been, that we've actually had some football to look back on. Loads to look through from the weekend's games, Saturday to Monday. So without further ado, it's probably worth getting stuck right into it. And we'll kick off with the early game on Saturday, which was obviously Aberdeen 0, Rangers 1 at Pittodrie. Instead of kind of just like dissecting things like, oh, here was the goal, how did it happen? We'll kind of just look at like the game as a whole and how each team sort of set up as things like that. So just start with, I mean, there's been a lot of criticism online on various platforms about Aberdeen and how Derek McInnes set his team up on Saturday. So it's probably worth starting on that. who wants to take the lead on the first criticism of Derek McInnes of 2020-2021.
There's only one person who can lead on this.
Yeah, it's taken 1 minute and 30 seconds of the first weekend recap of the season. So, Christy, just let go.
Yeah. Me need to go. Aberdeen basically played without any sort of identity and any kind of purpose. I really don't know what they were trying to do. And oh Christ, I'm currently watching the playoff final, and they've just put an advertisement up for St Johnstone v Aberdeen on this coming Saturday. And I'm like, geez, oh, this guy really, into torture through TV. But yeah, they're such a bad team to watch. There was no intensity. There was no, there was no real game plan other than sit back, and then when you get it, you lump it up to a striker who's not going to win the ball in the air. You know, it's putting it ramming it right down the throat of the Rangers' defence. Goldson and Balogun had probably the easiest game, one of the easiest games they'll have all season, because, you know, Bruce Anderson, as much as I rate him as a striker, that's, you know, it's not his game to be battling centre-backs with a ball in the air. It's his game to get in behind and for people to give him supply with balls in the box, which never happened. So I'm really baffled by how McInnes set the team up, because it's the same kind of setup that he's used before that just doesn't work.
Yeah, I was quite surprised in the build-up to this game at the, well, surprised in some sense at the level of optimism from Aberdeen fans, because, the record in these games isn't particularly great. But everybody looking at the lineup thought it's a pretty strong team, pretty strong bench. But unfortunately, yeah, just through the course of the game, And especially in the first half, there is almost a non-existent midfield. I can't recall Lewis Ferguson or Craig Bryson actually impacting the game at all, certainly in the first half. And Ojo, when he did, it was a negative impact. And quite often they were just bypassed, like you said, Christy, just long balls forward, which it's almost as though McInnes is just stuck with a game plan that he would have employed had he had Cosgrove or Main fit, and of course it doesn't suit Bruce Anderson's game at all, and Rory as well. I think you've made this point before, but the way that McInnes sets up his wingers is quite antiquated in the modern game, and for me they never really got close enough to Bruce Anderson to give him meaningful support. I just think it was a really disjointed performance, which is super disappointing. Yeah, and I had hoped that Aberdeen would have a little bit more balance starting this season.
Yeah, the winger issue is something that's really puzzled me with McInnes for going back, well, pretty much since the start of the calendar year. And yeah, it's almost as though he plays his wingers as essentially your wide midfielders would in a sort of olden days 4-4-2, whereas that's so out of fashion, out of date almost. And he seems to love doing it. I don't really see the point in him spending money on Matty Kennedy in January, who was probably one of the more exciting, more creative wingers outside of the top six until January last season, and then just have him sit in front of your fullback, who, I mean, we could probably get Andy Constant a bit later. In fact, we will. I just don't understand that. And if one of my major problems with this game and the setup was, this is just another sort of game that you can add to the list of McInnes's attempts to play this man-marking system and it not working. It's almost every single time Aberdeen play the Old Firm, especially against Celtic, he tries this and it just doesn't work. And it's essentially a large part to where the goal came from, and there's an early indicator of this happening. I think, well, Morelos drags McKenna kind of inside, or more towards the halfway line. It's more central on the pitch, and it creates space for Kent, and he kind of darts in from the left-hand side, and there's just too much on the ball, and it ends up in Lewis's hands. But yeah, if we can kind of move on to the goal now, and on Kennedy, McInnes is kind of already, you're one game in, and he's thrown another winger under the bus. I think he did it early on last season with Hedges. And McInnes has put the blame to the goal on Kennedy for showing Taverner the inside. Thoughts on that?
Mental.
I just...
Can I just go back a step? You said about the wingers there and talking about how he basically lines them up as an old-fashioned 4-4-2. I'd go further. At the weekend, they basically played wing-back in front of a full-back. The wingers were, rather than, you know, implementing their game on the Rangers, the wingers were genuinely there to double up defensively with a full-back on both Barisic and Tavernier. I mean, we've said this before in times where McInnes basically picks his wingers based on what they can do defensively rather than what they can do offensively. And again, this seemed to be the case as well. He basically asked them to, you know, he said they're just sit on top of the fullbacks to try and, you know, try and do the defensive work. But go and try and win the game. I just don't know what on earth you're thinking with a move like that. Yeah, the goals is something that we can dissect for days, really.
Yeah, well, just quickly, it's quite funny, on the last preview podcast that we joked that maybe Callum Davidson might play like a six at the back, and Derek McInnes almost did in the first game.
Yeah, I think as well, you can see what Chris is kind of talking about, because Rangers system allows for proper interchanging of positions. I think aside from really Kamara, who was kind of sat behind the ball more often than not, the rest of them were interchanging a lot. Obviously, I mean, like they did for this goal, pulling Aberdeen defenders out of position. And you didn't see that ever for Aberdeen. They were pretty much locked and confined to their pre-assigned roles. No fluidity at all. And yeah, I mean, on the goal in particular, the blame game put on Kennedy solely is insane when you consider that Rangers have gone from back to front, literally deep in their own box, to through on goal in three passes. That doesn't happen just because of one player's action.
Yeah, I think, well, before we came on, I sent this a picture to the WhatsApp group, and it was just... on this goal, and you look at the sole blame on Kennedy, and then, yeah, as you said, the midfield is like, it is so out of position. You wouldn't actually, if I just stuck this screenshot on Twitter and just said, and you wouldn't have known numbers and said, right, okay, pick out the midfielders, it would be so difficult for a neutral to, or someone who didn't really know Aberdeen's team, to do that, because it's just all over the place. There's no sense of structure at all. And it's just...
Is that not down to, like we said, the man-for-man system?
Yeah, that's totally down to it.
Because they've gone up with the man, that's where someone like Ojo or Ferguson should be in between there. You know, whereas if that happens with, let's say, with the Rangers, not that it ever did, you know, Kamara or Ryan Jacks in that hole there where they can potentially intercept it, or McKenna can pass Morelos onto an Ojo or a Ferguson, but because they've gone man for man, they're all reasonably high up the pitch, then, you know, that's just such a massive gap that needs to be plugged. And there's a square meterage it would be, but there's just a massive space that's empty, and that's all I really need to do is for one of the midfielders to drop 10, 15 yards to be in there, and then that pass is potentially not on. And then maybe the goal doesn't get, you know, the Rangers don't go and score from that.
Yeah, it's totally the issue with doing the man-for-man system. And I think if you were to like look into McInnes's mind, God forbid doing that, because it'd be a pretty dark place tactically. How he wants his team to sell against the Old Firm is so structured and stuff like that. And there's just zero structure to this. It's just wild how badly the team's positioned for this goal. And what you mentioned there has about this the kind of fluidity of the Rangers attacking players. I think that's something that Gerrard actually picked out for this game, and he almost knew that Aberdeen can be drawn about, and if you have players like floating in between positions, you'll just cause like chaos essentially.
I was really impressed, particularly with Kent and Hadji in terms of movement. I know Hadji didn't really have his best game, generally speaking. Some of his touches, his shots were off a little bit, but the way they moved and the way that Rangers moved the ball was quite impressive, particularly in the first half. But I mean, obviously, as we've kind of highlighted pretty extensively, it was made so much easier by this strange setup from Aberdeen.
Yeah, and something I found quite interesting about how Rangers set up as well is the front three, it was a weird sort of interchange of front four at times between you had Morelos as kind of the focal point, and then you had Hadji, Kent and Aribo pretty narrow in behind him. And it was just an area that's always been quite a weak spot for Aberdeen, is in between the space in between the centre-back and the full-back on both sides. And that's an area that they picked off really well, especially that space in between Constein and McKenna. And I think, well, obviously, Constein's going to be suspended for the next couple of games, but that could be an area that could be quite dangerous for Aberdeen this season, if Saturday's anything to go by. Anything sort of more you want to talk about in this sort of passage of the game?
It's just the man-for-man stuff. I mean, it's so easy to counteract it. I mean, I think that there's certain players that you maybe go, right, you follow him around because he's a massive danger man. So let's say, maybe someone like Celtic, whereas you've got a holding midfielder, you say, right, you just follow Ryan Christie about. So you stop him from getting on the ball, stop him from taking shots from distance, etc., which is fine, but don't do that for every single player on the pitch. For me, that just doesn't make sense. I think that one or two man-for-man jobs is fine, but you, when you're going basically man-for-man across the pitch, when you follow that player, you're going to create a massive gap where you've just left, and that's where, you know, Rangers can exploit it, and it's exactly what they did. There, when McKenna presses up with Morelos to go the man for man, there's just a massive gap. I mean, it's not all McKenna's fault. Taylor doesn't close the gap at all. He should really, you know, him and Hernandez should both be tucked in narrower. So, you know, it's a slight on them, but the goal in general is a disaster for Aberdeen. But I mean, nothing had really been not too much had happened until then. And then between then and the end of the half, not much happened either.
Well, yeah. Well, do you think? I mean, this is obviously such a massive season for Rangers. I mean, it's a big season for everyone, obviously. But with this, the 10-year-old dangling over their heads. And you never know how tight this is going to, how the sort of latter stage of the season could get. Do you reckon this game could be one you even look back on and think, we could have actually racked up a few nil goal difference here, even from early doors?
I think it's one of those games where Gerrard just wanted to close it out and just win the game. You know, we saw obviously when Rangers last came up to Pittodrie, they were dominant from the start, and then they lost their way and were arguably sort of lucky to come away with a point at the end. I think Gerrard basically just get yourself in front and make sure they can't do anything. And to be fair, they didn't have to try very hard for that. But something I wanted to point out was I was quite impressed with Balogun coming in. I think that he's a much better option than the sort of the partner for Goldson that they've got at the minute. I think that there was a couple of times where Bruce Anderson did get the chance maybe to get onto a ball, and I think that had that been Hollander, Anderson would have beat him to it. Especially, I think there's one not too long into the second half where Balogun comes across and gets it in time. I think if that's Hollander, you know, Anderson's possibly through one-on-one. I just think that Balogun looks like he's going to be the best sort of central defensive partner for Conor Goldson this year. I know it's early doors, but to me, just he looks the best fit at the minute.
Mm.
Yeah, I was going to say about Balogun. I think that like you said, Christy, I think he did show a good turn of pace. Looked quite assured on the ball. However, as I've kind of tried to keep my notes and sort of commentary for this week based on the fact that it's only one game. It sounds weird to say, but he's going to have a lot more challenging games defensively, where he's going to have more balls in behind. He's going to have the likes of Lyndon Dykes leaning into him constantly. So it's kind of more... I'm looking towards those challenges to see how he deals with those before I get too hyped up about him. But I think he did have a really good game and was one of the standout performers.
Someone who did have a really challenging game was Andy Constein, and I think a lot of it was partly down to himself. I thought his distribution was absolutely abysmal throughout. It was... I mean, so the contrast between him and Barisic on the other side was stark, and he obviously rounded the game off with a straight red card. I don't think there could be too many complaints about that, could there?
No, absolutely not.
No, it's not for me. It's one of them tackles that your old boys will be like, that's the sort of tackle that's dying out of football. It's like, well, the rules have changed, and he's sent off, so what are you going to do about it? Like, stop crying over a red card. Like, it's that's what the laws are telling you, so I mean, get over it. And yeah, I think I just thought he was absolutely crap, so
yeah, he was pretty wrong.
Sorry, Christy, I was just gonna say, I mean, we can you can look at the system, definitely was set up wrong from Aberdeen. However, some of the individual performances do deserve specific criticism, and Constantine is obviously at the top of the pile, but the likes of Ojo as well. I commented at the time in the first half, he hadn't won a single physical duel in the middle of the park, which I just found close to embarrassing, really, for a central midfielder with as high a reputation as him.
Yeah, I think we could probably do an entire podcast on criticising Aberdeen from this game. The more I watch it, the more issues I find.
Two more little notes on this. I think that this showed the difference between the pre-seasons, I think, with Rangers obviously playing a higher, more games and a higher caliber of oppositions. I also noticed that even with the five subs, Gerrard's still reluctant to use them. I mean, he only brought on Scott Arfield, It's been a sticking point a little bit for Rangers fans with Gerrard, is that he does tend to leave his subs very late, and even then uses them poorly. This was a game that he didn't really need to make too many changes to, but it's interesting to see, obviously, with the five subs, that he's still not really using them. And on the sub point, I think McInnes used his way too late. We're talking about Ojo there, we're talking about Bryson. These guys were having stinkers, and it was clear at half-time that it wasn't working, and they still lasted till sort of 65, 75 minutes between them.
Yeah, I've seen that before, though.
I think to your point about Gerrard's subs, Christy, that potentially is just a case of the trust in his players to see out the game and to continue to execute the game plan.
Mm.
Final thing is with the two Rangers strikers
are
signed today.
Yeah, but I was going to kind of touch on them after we finished up with the game, to be fair.
I thought you were going to move on to the next game. No,
I was just pretty much going to ask any positives from Aberdeen. One for me was Hernandez looked pretty decent at right back. I think what would have happened with Shea Logan in there.
Oh my god.
I thought he was probably one of the positives from Saturday for Aberdeen.
I thought when Hedges came on, he at least provided some sort of drive forwards. But I mean, even that was fairly sparse.
Mm.
Edmondson looked okay when he came on. He came on. He actually won a few aerial duels, and I think he won a header or two at the front post at corners. So I think he looked promising from the little glimpses we saw. He looked very much in the mould of, McInnes's ideal striker.
Yeah.
Big, tall, strong. He looks to be decent on the ball. And we'll maybe get on to someone a little bit later who definitely looks like McInnes's wet dream of a striker.
Yeah. Let's move on to the two new signings for Rangers today. So, a name that's probably pretty well known to us, Kemar Roofe, he's come in. I think it's undisclosed. I think both fees are undisclosed as of now, so I'm not really going to comment.
I hate undisclosed fees.
Yeah, what the fee is, I'm not sure. But obviously he's been out in Anderlecht. Was it 2 years or has he only been out
just
from,
a year?
Yeah, previously of Leeds United. I can't really remember too much of him, to be fair, from his time at Leeds, but from I memory, any is a good signing?
Yeah, I'd say it is.
It has?
I think it's an excellent signing, actually, because from what I've seen of Kemar Roofe previously, obviously when he was at Leeds, even right up until he left, he was a super important player. In fact, quite surprised that he wasn't still there. I think he was a better striking option than what they've even currently got. And he's got the ability, like we were saying, to be part of a fluid front line and sort of drop into the midfield at times when it's required. I think he's a really effective player in that sense, and also a pretty proven goal scorer. If you look at his record, it's something like, I think it's maybe like 1-4 through his career professionally. I could be wrong about that. I had a quick skim about his stats, but I think it's
good. Improved significantly the last sort of year or two. He's mm-hmm. goal return. I think he struggled his first year. I looked at it earlier. Struggled his first year at Leeds, but I didn't look at it, how many of those appearances were starts and subs. But the last 2 years that he had and with Anderlecht, it's kind of a somewhere in between a 1-2, 1-3, I think he will definitely look good up here. Is he not? I don't really know the way to go about it, but is he not a little bit of a character in terms of a little bit fiery? Maybe a little bit difficult. I don't really know if that's the right term, but is he?
Yeah. Well, I think there is a sense of that, but. Well, I think towards the end of his time at Leeds, you saw less of that. And I think that, to be fair, there's some decent personalities in the Rangers coaching staff, so hopefully they'll keep him grounded. The only thing I would say is that I remember him being injured a fair bit in his last year or so at Leeds, so hopefully he can stay fit.
And the second signing is Cedric Eaton. He's came in from FC St. Gallen, is that how it's pronounced? Again, undisclosed. I think this one's been rumoured for a couple of weeks now. Again, can't really say I know too much about the guy, but just on a quick look, 34 league appearances in the Swiss league last season, 19 goals and 6 assists, so
that's a good return.
That's a pretty tasty return from him. And just kind of had a quick skim on Transfer Market earlier, and it was interesting to see that in under comparable players you had Albion Ajeti, who's obviously linked with Celtic, so obviously we're playing in the same division last season. But yeah, as I say, can't really say I know too much about him, but at the age of 23 with a decent goal return like that last season, potentially some a signing that they could be looking to maybe make some money off of in the future.
Four-year deals. That's pretty substantial. Yeah. I was going to say, little bit of experience for with Cedric Eaton on Football Manager, and what I can say is he's actually a bit more of a physical presence as a striker. So that could help just for the Rangers squad. Obviously, to have a little bit of a different option, which never hurts.
Does this mean Morales is off then?
I'd probably think so. If two forwards are coming in with already Defoe in the books, I'd imagine it's probably the end of Morelos at Rangers.
Yeah, if you're signing these two guys and you're going to keep Morelos in, and you've obviously got Defoe, you've kind of got four starting, four guys who would start for. You look at being starters vying for one position.
Yeah.
Team, so you've got to look at it. It's probably, unfortunately, for the kind of
the banter side of the game, and quality
side of things. Yeah, it'll be obviously kind of gotten to see Morales. Hopefully, if it's off to France, you can find a better barber. my only other thing is, I think that the guy Eaton. FC St. Gallen will be replacing him with Florian Kimberi.
Oh, wow.
Okay, lads.
Well, I think Rangers have probably got the better end of the bargain there.
Absolutely.
So, well, in fact, you mentioned Kimberi there. We'll move on to his current club. As you said, don't imagine it will be much longer. Hibs, obviously, they won. Obviously, moving into the 3 o'clock kickoffs now. They won 2-1 against Kilmarnock. Any thoughts about this game? Just to start us off, I was pretty impressed with Hibs in the first half and the way they set up. I thought they looked really dangerous.
On you go.
Yeah, I thought they looked pretty dangerous with the front two, and this bit of Boyle and Allen just kind of in behind. I don't know what you guys thought of the way that Hibs set up.
Yeah, it kind of caught me off guard, actually, seeing Martin Boyle deployed as more of a striker. And the other thing I would say is that I think Jack Ross is certainly at least got a lot closer to finding a good balance in midfield with Alan Gogic and Newell through the middle. And also, we were kind of talking about this, but obviously with the two wing-backs, Doig was more of an outright defender, whereas obviously Dre Wright had more license to go forward. So I think the balance was a lot better going forward. However, there are still some question marks at the back.
Yeah, for sure.
Much agree with that. I do think that the way that Harry's obviously said there with the two wing backs, it gives them an option to change it up even mid game if that's the kind of wing backs I want to go with pushing Paul McGinn out as a right back, drop Doig in one, and then play Dre Wright as one of the front three. I was kind of surprised to see Joel Newell start in the middle of midfield. I mean, he came on to a game best as a wing back towards the end of the season, so he's kind of been deployed in numerous positions. I still think that the central midfield is somewhere where they maybe need to sign a more of a box to box type player.
A Greg Docherty.
Yeah, pretty much him. But no, Hibs did look very dangerous in the attack, and a lot of that is through the pace of Martin Boyle. Since coming back from injury, we were kind of, you know, he had basically been out for the best part of a year. We were kind of worried about if he'd maybe lost the yard. If anything, he looks even quicker. He's added, I think, big time to his game. I think he's, you know, people maybe criticise him for the lack of end product. That's not there anymore. It's very clear to see that he's got better when he's crossing and he's finishing since his time out. So I was fairly impressed with Hibs. I thought with Kelly, kind of a strange lineup to begin with. You know, hopefully for them, the fullbacks went with, hopefully they remain as kind of backup fullbacks, because highly unimpressed by them, and they probably still need to add a bit. When you have kind of poor fullbacks, you need to add more width, and Burke and Rory McKenzie playing as your wide players, they're going to come inside. So the Kelly team did sorely lack width to begin with, and when you're playing against a team playing the kind of 3-5-2, that needs to be your strength to, you know, to double up in those areas, and they just didn't have the players to do it.
Yeah, I thought, well, just kind of got the highlights on in the background, and who'd have thought this one? You've got Alex Gogic starting a move and almost finishing it off. That's something that you would have not expected when we kind of...
Was that when the commentator said he got his big bald dome on it?
I've not actually heard that commentary, but I'm all on board with that. It is quite, like, well, no offence to the guy, but it's a bit of a big bald dome. But that sort of figure of comedy a few years ago that we've obviously joked about, but I actually thought he had a pretty decent game in that holding midfield role for Hibs, and he's almost obviously they let Marvin Bartley go last summer, and missed someone in that position big time, and I think he actually, obviously it's one game, so there's not an awful lot you can go off of, but I think he could be a player to fill that gap. But what you're saying there, Has, about Boyle and being surprised about him being deployed as a striker, you know, maybe he thought as a sort of five at the back or 3-5-2 that he'd be in there at wing back, but proved to be a pretty deadly finisher in this game. I don't even though, well, might as well touch on it now, the goalkeeping error. It's an absolute calamitous error from Eastwood. I've no idea what he's thinking.
I was just going to say, I think it goes to show that Jack Ross has really been studious with his players in pre-season, because Kevin Nisbet, obviously, for that first goal, has kind of dropped a little bit deeper than Boyle, and is feeding him, which obviously, when you look at Kevin Nisbet's goal return, you think he needs to be the one on the receiving end of these passes, but he's got the ability to do that. And then, yeah, I mean, like you said, I think this is a young goalkeeper trying to make an impression. So it's unfortunate, and perhaps he doesn't realise just how pacey Martin Boyle is. He's just totally misjudged it. And then, obviously, unfortunately for him, he gets injured.
Did he get injured?
Well, I think it would be a pretty bad lie to dish out from Alex Dyer, because then if he ends up being on the bench next game, it's like,
yeah,
that would look like your career's over before it started at Kilmarnock. So, it's unfortunate because he couldn't really redeem himself. But credit to Boyle, it's a really cool finish from that position.
Yeah, when I was watching Alex Dyer's interview and he said he blew out his quads, and it just immediately made me think of when Vince McMahon blew his quads at the Royal Rumble, and he's just sat there in the ring trying to sort of figure out how to finish this match. But yeah, I think that's actually a harder finish than it looks from Boyle, with two Achilles players sort of closing down the angle. But kind of shifting on to the second goal, I think this is the area and sort of work that you want Scott Allen to be doing. This is absolutely peaky. He obviously picks the ball up pretty deep, and I think he just sits Tshibola down and, yeah, feeds an absolutely, well, it's not, I was going to say absolutely brilliant pass, it's a decent pass, pretty simple enough, into Boyle's feet. And I think you have some criticism aimed towards the goalkeeper here, Christy.
Yeah, it's not only the keeper, it's Callum Waters, the left-back as well. But yeah, just a little bit before, I think both goals they're quite similar, and Kilmarnock players overcommitting. So I can't remember who it is, but you know, someone overcommits to Kevin Nisbet for the first goal, and that's what allows him to sort of lift it over his head and slip and Boyle. And for this one, obviously Tshibola, you know, I don't know why he's diving in like that. It's so easy for Scott Allen to just chip the ball over him and go from there. Yeah, but Callum Waters doesn't get anywhere near close enough, doesn't really show him the line, allows Boyle to take the shot, and the goalkeeper, yeah, his positioning's off. He's, you know, he's basically defending his front post and that's it. The position he's in doesn't really allow him to make the save coming across the goal. I think that he's too slow to get down, and I also think that he probably doesn't outstretch enough to get there. I don't think he stretches his arm out enough. So it's really, as a goal overall, it's a bit of a horror show for Kilmarnock.
Yeah, that point about Killy kind of over-eager to counter-press, if you like. It's Alan Power for the first goal, and then yeah, and then a combination of I think McKenzie and Tshibola, like you mentioned, Rory, that are really just so eager to snap in and take the ball back off of Alan,
which is odd later on when it comes to Boyle and Callum Waters is almost hesitant to go near him.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's okay to be a counter press inside when you've got a solid foundation behind you, but this back four is fairly new, so and hasn't got that much experience of playing together, so it didn't really make too much sense for me. But what I would say is, and I've always had a kind of history of sticking up for Achille, I don't think that this game went particularly well for them. But I think that for what Alex Dyer clearly is trying to do, which is play a possession-based style of play, Aaron Tshibola is a good hub for that kind of system.
Mm, yeah, I was actually quite surprised when I looked at sort of possession stats or passing stats after the game. I think Killy made over 100 passes more than Hibs. And it was about 55% possession in their favour. And I think it was a large portion of their passes made were kind of short passes. So it's a completely different style of play that Dyer's looking to play than the sort of Clark-esque system or style that we kind of expected him to play, which is, obviously, we haven't really caught much of what some teams have been doing in pre-season, but yeah, not really what I'd have expected. But Killy obviously got a goal back through Chris Burke, and we've probably got an early contender for goal of the season. But again, Chris, you have some beef with Ophir Marciano for this one.
Yeah, Marciano, and a little bit with Hibs in general. I think they try and overplay coming out from the back, and let me say, Hibs almost maybe being a little bit more direct actually seem to be to their benefit. We know that Hibs fans like to bash on about, oh, we play football the right way and all this sort of stuff, but maybe being a bit more direct, they'll see you be a bit more successful. But yeah, Marciano for this one, for me, you need to put an extra man in the wall. I think it's you move Nisbet along and Allen along, and you plug that gap there. Marciano just needs to take maybe two steps off to his right, which means he totally blocks off that top corner for Burke, which means he's got to go, if he's going to have a go at goal, he's got to go over the wall. And there's every chance he goes over the wall and it goes in. But at least you're actually you know where he has to go. Whereas this one, his position, in the fact that he'd left that open in the wall, the fact that he'd positioned himself in the middle of the goal, and he also bounces up as sort of Burke striking it, which means he's late to get across. I mean, take nothing away from Burke, it is a phenomenal hit. But at the same time, I think for Marciano, it's very, very avoidable.
Yeah, I really appreciate the way he's hit this. Not a massive run-up, but he's generated so much power. And yeah, I think there are definitely are criticisms of Hibs and Marciano, but like you said, Rory, this is definitely going to be a contender going forward for goal of the season.
Yeah, I think just kind of finally on this game, it looked as though towards the second half that Killie kind of came into it a wee bit more, and I think that almost turned on Jack Ross making a few changes and going to four at the back. And it kind of just begs the question whether the 3-5-2 system, or maybe even a sort of a 3-4-3, whatever, when Deutsch is fit, surely that's the most dangerous system they can be going forward with.
Possibly, but I still think with the way that they've set up in this game, it does allow them to merge between a kind of a 4 at the back, a 4-3-3 and a 3-5-2, which I think is good to vary it and keep an opponent on their toes. But for me, the more interesting thing was sort of Killie's selection and more the players that they left out. Obviously, we look at it, it's likely, hopefully for them, they played the reserve fullbacks, knowing in Brophy, Gary Dicker didn't even make it on the park, a returning Greg Kilty who has a massive season ahead of him.
What I was meaning, I guess, when was the sort of the way that we set up. I guess it was more the changes that really affected them, because I guess they can obviously drop sort of, if they were playing a 4 or a 3, they could drop Gogic in and out of the centre of defence if they wanted to make it like a 4, a 3. But yeah, the changes, like taking Allen off for Daryl Horgan and then Wright for Stevenson, I guess it was maybe Jack Ross wanted to just make sure he gets the 3 points on the opening day. But I'm thinking that they'll be going 3 at the back moving forward. But be interesting to see what happens when Doig is fit, I guess.
Yeah, I'd agree. And also, I think setting up with the three central midfielders there, there's plenty of legs in there, plenty of energy, which suits them pretty well. And credit to Gogic. Obviously, I've criticised him a lot in the past, but had a really good game. I'm starting to wonder whether the butt of those jokes should have actually been Hamilton Academical. Because perhaps they've just looked at him and thought, well, he's pretty big. Maybe he could be a centre-half, but maybe he's just been a centre-mid all along.
Mm. So we'll shift on to another game that three at the back was heavily involved in, the new normal, as I like to call it. Forget COVID. 3-5-2 is the new normal. And that was Dundee United 1, St Johnstone 1 at Tannadice. Obviously, Dundee United making their return to the top flight. I think it's quite an interesting game, to be honest, the way both teams set up. Obviously, both managers first. Games permanent managers, I guess, in the top flight. And it couldn't have got off to a better start for Dundee United with the opening score, I think, 6 minutes through, and Nicky Clark Penn, who I absolutely slated a few weeks ago in the preview. So, I mean, joke's on me. But
yeah, I mean, I picked them up.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, as I say, yeah, I'm the one who the joke's on. But obviously, scores through a penalty. Opinions on the pen?
Yeah, it's a penalty.
Yeah, I think.
I think it's harsh, to be fair, because like to call that an unnatural arm position is maybe a little bit harsh, but yeah, it is outstretched. But if you're gonna dive to make a block, that is the way your arm would be, you know. So it's a hard one, but yeah, I think there is enough distance. I think you're maybe right on that.
I think Xander Clark would have been pretty pleased with that stop. To be fair, so
he wasn't even playing. So
if he was playing, so
supposedly injured.
Yeah, well, just number one. Anyway, Dundee United take the lead. I thought throughout the sort of opening stages of the first half, I guess, almost up until the red card, that Dundee United looked pretty decent. Some decent attacking moves. I think they built from the back pretty well. I quite like look of Ian Harkes in midfield. I've only seen him a couple of times through in the Championship, and a lot of those times it's going to be sort of derby games where it's quite a tough game, especially in the centre of the pitch. But I thought he was involved in most of the good things that Dundee United were creating. So I think he might be one to look out for this season. Obviously, Shankland was quite quiet throughout. I thought it was quite interesting. I think I saw a shot map of his from the 90, and all of them were from very sort of tight angles. St Johnstone managed to narrow him down to almost the edge of the 6-yard box for each of his attempts, which is, a well-planned sort of defensive organisation from Callum Davidson. But I think a lot of this game kind of hinged on the O'Halloran red card. Do you reckon he could have been sent off for his first yellow at all?
No. I think it's quite borderline, to be honest. It's a really reckless challenge. I did look at it and think, I mean, his studs are up there. I think the ref's been quite lenient there, to be honest. And I think it maybe is to do with the fact it's fairly early in the game, but I disagree with that. I think he was sort of at it all game. And it just seemed like he was a ticking time bomb. But actually, I think that the sending off, in a way, benefited St Johnstone defensively, because this was something I was talking to you about, before this. He provided absolutely zero assistance to McNamara, Danny McNamara, on his debut. And it just allowed Jamie Robson to get forward and create an overload many, many times early on in the game. It really put St Johnstone under pressure, but with him getting sent off, a little change in the system kind of benefited St Johnstone as a stable defensive unit.
Yeah, I think after the game, Callum Davidson actually said we were better when we went down to 10, so what that says for Michael O'Halloran after he comes back from his ban, then I'm not too sure. Overall thoughts so far in the first half from Dundee United. What were your thoughts? Open up to both you guys.
I was fairly impressed. Like you said there earlier, there's a lot of the link play between a lot of the forward players, obviously Clark and Shankland, and involving likes of Harkes and Pollock. So I was reasonably impressed there, and I don't remember St Johnstone being able to create too much against them in the first half. From memory, watching highlights, there was only that sort of one shot from distance from David Wotherspoon, which wasn't ever really troubling. Wasn't ever really going to trouble Benjamin Seagrass in goal. So I think Dundee United, it very much kept them at bay with the setup that they had, whilst looking fairly dangerous themselves. So in terms of the first half, you know, Mickey Millen would have been pretty pleased going at half time, especially against we've been up against 10 men for the second half. But looking at the end of the game, despite what he says, if you're up 1-0 half time against 10 men, you really ought to be seeing that out. And it's, I actually think it's a disappointing result for Dundee United that they didn't come away with the win.
Yeah, I'd oh, you go, Haz.
No, I was just going to say, it's super disappointing, and especially when, well, in my opinion, I thought it was super unfortunate. I mean, obviously, it's we'll sort of get to the St. Johnstone equaliser early in the second half, but I thought it was fairly unlucky. It's a fairly hopeful cross from McNamara, and it's just one of those where you want to get something on it as a defender, but it's just come off your boot at the complete wrong angle. And to be fair, that's a stunning finish from Liam Craig.
Yeah, I mean, if this makes sense, I think it's a disappointing result, but a decent enough performance from Dundee United. Yeah. I think what you said about the equaliser, it's pretty poor from Connolly, and I think as well I saw someone on Twitter. He actually had a pretty decent game throughout. But what I want to point out from this goal is Callum Butcher in midfield, and I guess this is kind of the midfield as a whole. I mean, he's going to be in there as your sort of your holding guy, I'm assuming. And he's on the St. John's rather have the ball probably about 30 yards or so inside their half. And he just charges, makes a beeline for the left centre-back, and he just opens up a massive space. And, I mean, as Aberdeen supporters, we know Peter Pollitt, as a part of a midfield three, he's not really going to be able to get back and know what he's doing positionally. And it's almost as big a part, I think, from that goal as the Connolly clearance, because he just, Butcher's just left a massive space there for Craig to take up. And, yeah, it's a great finish from Craig.
I think that's a massive shame, because I was actually impressed by Callum Butcher in possession, and I know, again, they're playing against 10 men, he's going to get more time on the ball, but yeah, I thought he moved the chains fairly well from that holding position, but perhaps positional discipline in this system is something that needs some work, but yeah, I think, and again, I don't want to go overboard, but I do think that Dundee United looked a lot more comfortable in their shape and in their system than St. Johnstone did. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason that St. Johnstone can't improve. They've got a fairly solid squad there. So I think for both sides, there's plenty of positives to take from this.
Mm. I've got a slightly different take on the goal. I don't know if it's a bit off base because I've not seen it from that angle. But looking at roughly where the ball is, do you reckon that's one that the keeper could have called for to stop Conley having to sort of hook it? I mean, it's likely coming into the 6-yard box.
His body position is for the clearance, like that clearance is only going one place and it's straight back into the box. If he's clearing that, he's just got to head out for a corner and just take your medicine almost.
I think there's an element that the goalkeeper could have called for it and could have come out and claimed it.
I think the keeper could have maybe told him to head it out even, but I guess that's such a quick sort of reaction. Maybe a bit asking too much on him.
He's probably thinking of a near post run from someone. In that case, he would need to get someone on it, but yeah, it's one of those where he needs a shout from either one of his defensive partners or the keeper to either kind of leave it for the goalkeeper or for the goalkeeper himself to come and claim it.
Mm. So I think overall, you're probably saying that Callum Davidson's coming out of this with more, or probably a bit more pleased with the result rather than Mickey Mellon. But I guess we'll move on to the final of the Saturday 3 o'clocks, which was St Mirren 1, Livingston 0. Quite an interesting game, I thought. I don't think either side should be this is more focused at Livingston, I guess, should be too disappointed with their performance. Obviously, disappointed with not getting a win on the first day. But I thought both sides actually looked pretty decent. And I said before we came on, the only sort of negative towards Livingston's play was just because, which was their attacking threat and not really having much threat inside the penalty area, was because St Mirren nullified that pretty well. So I don't think either side can be too disheartened with that performance.
No, I'd agree. Yeah, I think we've spoken about the way that Jim Goodwin likes to set up as a solid defensive team. I think that the defence he's assembled allows him to do that a lot more effectively. They effectively nullified Lyndon Dykes. The only things that he was really involved in were little flick-ons to his teammates. Didn't really seem to be provided with a lot of service throughout the game. So they'll be really pleased with that. And obviously, Richard Tate getting a goal just goes to show that they can be bold when in possession as well, a little bit more so than last season. Still, I think, lacking a bit of cutting edge up front. But yeah, I think they've made some fairly significant improvements this season. But Livingston did, you know, they huffed and puffed, but St Mirren are a tough team to break down now.
Yeah, I think it's something that's been pretty obvious with the way that Goodwin obviously set his team up last season and the way he's recruited this summer. Is he just wants to get that solid defence in, and if St Mirren allow him time, then that's something you can just kind of, if you're wanting to recruit, start with a good base with your goalkeeper and your defence, then you can start adding more creative players further up the field. But you mentioned there Richard Tate opening the scoring. I actually really like this goal. I think it's a really good cross from McGrath from sort of a deep, narrow position. It's something that's really difficult to defend because I don't think the Livingston line know entirely where to set themselves. And it's just such a quick, like, sort of reaction if you're going to drop or push up. And Richard Tate finds himself in a decent position. I think it's between Dykes and I can't remember the defender he's found himself in between. And that's a pretty tasty position if you're a defender attacking across. Get yourself in front of the striker, someone who's probably not the best at marking that set pieces. So I really like that goal, actually. Don't you guys call it?
Fair play to Jim McGrath. He's absolutely spotted that run and picked him out brilliantly. I think it's St Mirren take advantage of the fact that Livingston hadn't quite got themselves set again after the breakdown in the corner when it came back out. McGrath has been a little bit too much time to pick it out. I don't think he's closed down quick enough. But yeah, it's a fantastic, an absolutely fantastic run from Tate, and you just love to see a diving header, especially at quite a low height.
Just quickly, kind of sticking on Richard Tate. I actually think I can't remember when we did our season preview if I was too I thought Motherwell would be too sort of bothered about letting him go, but I was actually really impressed with him. And I know you made this sort of point before we recorded, has just about need to remember it's just only one game, but I thought he played really well, and he offered St Mirren a bit of a threat from wide positions, obviously coming from fullback, that they didn't really have last season. So I think he actually could end up being a pretty shrewd signing.
Yeah, I mean, that left hand side looks especially potent, obviously, with him and Dermouche. There's a lot of threat there, and yeah, it does add a different dimension to St Mirren, and to be fair, they did need a new dimension going forward, because at times they looked a little bit blunt last season. But to get a result like this, and yeah, I mean, we've said it many times already, but on the opening day, again, even on the opening day against Livingston is big for St Mirren. And perhaps they can go on to have a more successful season than we previously thought.
I think something that I'd like to give Jim Goodwin a bit of credit for, obviously, you mentioned there, Christy, about four of the back five, including the goalkeeper, making their debuts. And I think some credit needs to go to his defensive sort of coaching. He's managed to organise them in a fairly quick time. Obviously, with Shaughnessy coming in quite late in the window as well, he's not had a load of time to work with his team. So I think there's some credits due there because they were pretty solid throughout. I don't think Livingston had many real clear-cut chances. Like Anik had to make a good save from Forrest, but it was about it.
That was one of them. And then I think Craig Fibbold hit the post from distance. But yeah, that for me the chance for Alan Forrest was the only one that I can really think of where Livingston sort of carved them open a little bit.
Yeah, I think, and the if Sibbold scores that shot from that far out, you kind of just need to, you can obviously analyse and maybe worry your midfield and stuff like that, but sometimes you kind of need to hold your hands up and say like that, wow, that's a screamer, like not much there could be done there.
Even the Forest chance itself comes through a fair bit of individual guile from Forrest to kind of carve that one out. And I was also going to say that in itself is quite big for Jack Anik, just to give him a bit of confidence that he's basically saved his team the 3 points in that particular passage.
Yeah, especially when you've gone for so long without sort of like regular football, just a wee bit of a reassurance that, a big confidence booster, I guess. Is there anything kind of more I want to touch on this game?
Effie Ambrose playing left wing back.
Ah, yeah, of course, yeah. That's something that I'm all for.
I don't get what it was about, because why was he playing there with Taylor Sinclair and the left side of centre back? I thought it would have been the other way around, especially given that all Effie Ambrose can do when he gets the ball is cut inside because he's not got much of a left foot. I just don't get playing a basically a right footed centre back at left wing back. I just don't really understand it. And obviously Livingston sort of reverting back to the kind of three at the back. It looked like last year they'd moved to a four. The change back to threes is one I'm sure we'll see how it plays out. The only thing was Moiras had a chance towards the end. He's really, really got to score to sort of put the seal on the win. I think Scott Pittman actually does okay to sort of put him off. But it was a big opportunity, and especially for a team that maybe would struggle for goals, to have a big confidence booster for the striker. For a striker on opening day would have been good. But still an impressive win for St Mirren.
For sure. Anything else from you, Haz, on St Mirren Livingston?
No, I mean, just on Marias, obviously, that, like Kirsty said, would have been big, considering he didn't even start the game, which in itself is quite positive, because he was an important player towards the back end of last season for St Mirren. So a bit more, or a few more options for them going forward this year, which is always good.
Yeah. So we'll move on to the Sunday game, which was obviously Celtic 5, Hamilton 1. Hamilton started the game pretty well, I thought, roughly around the first goal. They obviously weren't sort of in control of the game, but when they managed to get hold of the ball, it was obviously usually in sort of counter-attacking phases. I thought they used it pretty well. Obviously, there's times where they could have could have finished off a chance, but I think it's a David Moyo header. On another day, you might have found the corner of the goal with that. But yeah, I think they did okay. And with Stude Celtic for that length of time, but. I mean, it was only a matter of time, I guess, with the sort of team that Celtic had out that day.
Well, I would say that Hamilton did do all right for a little period of time, but I mean, obviously, just with the highlights playing in the background after that period of time, after they went 1-0 down, and they lost a bit of confidence. And their ability to play a low block against this Celtic team with those two fullbacks, with their quality of delivery and their attacking input, just completely wilted away. And yeah, it's not exactly surprising, but they were completely obliterated in the wide areas.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned there about the low block is what almost sets apart these Celtic to the other teams in the league, is how good their fullbacks are attacking wise, and that's kind of the example. That's the second goal almost, when you get Greg Taylor crossing from one side and Frimpong coming in to finish from the other. Yeah, it's the like exactly what you want when you're playing that sort of. Your fullbacks that high up the pitch.
Is that not Cruyff's favourite goals, fullback to fullback?
It's certainly one of my favourite goals anyway. Especially after watching a bit of Atalanta. Love a bit of that. So,
Also, you've got to say that Greg Taylor's. If Greg Taylor continues to deliver crosses with that kind of power and accuracy, he's going to rack up so many assists this year.
Yeah, I think that's probably ball and goalie finished almost.
Ball and goalie is going to be definitely the backup now to Taylor. In terms of all games, I think that Frimpong will definitely play some of these games. Maybe in Europe, they might look to go a little bit more defensive with El Hamid, but Taylor, I think he's basically nailed on his starting berth.
I thought, in fairness to Hamilton, they're free. I don't know if I'm giving them too much credit here with the free kick. I thought it was well worked in the sense that they managed to drag a lot of the Celtic bodies to the far post, and that almost like created the space for Martin on the edge, and almost any sort of low driven shot at goal, deflection or not, was going to cause some sort of trouble.
It was a rubbish shot, actually. It was a rubbish shot.
Yeah, and
I was
going to say. It wasn't very good, but I just had enough power that at any sort of nick and it's flying in the net. And he was obviously pretty lucky. It did nick off Julien. But
it takes one off of McGregor first as well. I think.
Oh God! So it takes two net deflections.
Even with a double deflection,
still kind of trickled, didn't it?
Yeah, he's way too slow to react to it, and he's too slow to get down. I do think that he should keep that out. I don't know if he's kind of one of them. I'd need to see it again if he's sort of bounced before it. He's made the movement. Again, that's a kind of pet hate for goalkeepers doing that, because once you bounce, you can't move. You're only moving up and down rather than to your right or left. But yeah, for me, that this is the kind of reason why Celtic have gone and spent a bit of money on getting a first choice goalkeeper. And probably the last league game Scott Baines played, unless of suspension or injury.
You'd have probably thought
yeah,
so.
Yeah, he'll be gutted about that, given Barkas's arrival.
Well, I picked him in fantasy football because I thought, they'll keep a clean sheet against Hamilton at least. And obviously, when that went in, I was like, that's my plan gone to the wall. But I don't know what's sort of more heavily weighed in the sides here. Is it were Hamilton's defence cut open way too easily in this game, or was Celtic's attack, just their movement and attack, way too much for Hamilton? More in the sense like good team comes against average team and good team wins.
Yeah, I think in that first half, it's more a case of Celtic's quality. In the second half, and I was kind of remarking on Brian Rice's post-match interview where he sort of criticises his team for being naive. You can see that to an extent. I mean, they're clearly not setting up to defend deep in the second half, and they just get cut open with ease. you know, Edouard scores a really straightforward hat trick for a striker of his caliber, and then you know, you're allowing Klamala to run at one defender, and you know, it's a decent enough finish. Again, I would be critical of the goalkeeper in this situation. He's a bit too close to his near post, for my liking anyway. But yeah, you can see a bit of naivety, but surely that is coming from the manager. So I'm not really sure about the origins of that criticism from Brian Rice. But yeah, it was. It's one of those where you don't necessarily want Hamilton to just sit back all half and sort of, you know, just wait for an inevitable defeat. But when it goes 3-1, they're not going to come back.
No.
No. And then very quickly, 4-1. I agree with Harry on that one. The first two goals, first half, definitely, you know, Celtic's fluid attacking, playing better. But in the second half, it's just not tracking, just not following runners, not tracking players, leaving big gaps. And it's epitomised by the fifth goal. I mean, you allow a 50-yard pass along the deck to reach a striker in behind the defence. I mean, that's just inexcusable stuff. And that's the kind of reason that we all kind of say that Hamilton are probably favourites to go down, because whereas we look at St Mirren maybe being a little bit toothless up front, they look very, very good defensively. Ross County, we maybe look at them being maybe a little weak defensively, but at the same time, they've got players up front that can score. Hamilton are, you know, bad at both things. They don't look like they're going to keep many clean sheets, and they don't look like they're going to score many goals. So, you know, when you've got that combination, it's just going to end in disaster.
One just kind of final thing on this game. Patrick Klamala obviously got the fifth goal. I think that's quite a big goal for a couple of reasons. One, for himself, obviously getting a bit of some confidence with a goal. And the other one is with the rumours about Adjeti coming in. That's kind of Lee Griffiths further down the pecking order. So I guess one of the other big points is where does that leave Griffiths? Do you reckon he has a future? If this is obviously if Adjeti comes in, but if he does Griffiths have much of a future at Celtic?
I think we need to wait. There's still obviously till the end of the end of October for this transfer window, but speaking in terms of the national team, we really need to get him playing for these playoffs. He is, you know, like it or not, he is Scotland's best striker. Mm. And we really need him match fit, ready to go. So, you know, I think that if Adjeti comes in, then he really needs to make up his mind. If he's seen it as a third, fourth choice, he needs to go out and start playing. And to be fair, he needs to go out and start playing even for a possible place, not only for these playoffs, but hopefully for the Euros. I mean, if he's not played for 6 months before the Euros, there's every chance that they're not going to go and pick him. So,
Yeah, I think, I mean, ideally he would be getting minutes for Celtic. I think it does benefit him, obviously, to be playing in a team where he's going to score lots and lots of goals for his club and then, you know, obviously go away for Scotland. But, you know, he's also not getting any younger, so this is the sort of time where he really does need to be getting regular game time. So it's a really important summer, I guess, for Lee Griffiths personally.
Yeah. So move on to the final. On you go, Chris.
My last point. Yeah, was I find it a little bit odd that Celtic chose so late to use their substitutes. I mean, you know, then Cham was on with 20 minutes to go, and Dembele, Kavana, and El Hamid sort of got 5 minutes at the end. I thought this was maybe a good chance to get a bit more minutes for the likes of Klamana, Cham, and Tom Rogic as well. Get players competitive minutes. You know, I think that you could have given some of these guys a sort of a half hour run out. You know, the game at 4-1 at this stage is done. Give players who are hungry to show that I want to play, I want to be a starter, or I wouldn't, or if in Klamana's case where he clearly won't be a starter, you know, I want to be the second striker behind Edouard. I feel it was maybe a slight missed opportunity to get some guys who will be important over the course of the season some good game time.
Yeah, for sure. So I think we'll move on to the final game now, which was played last night. Ross County 1, Motherwell 0. I thought I didn't catch it live, but from the highlights I've seen, it looked as though Ross County and Stuart Kettlewell have really changed their style of play from last season. Last season, obviously, quite a direct side. You mentioned it earlier in the podcast, Christy, a Derek McInnes wet dream of a striker, being Ross Stewart, so he leading the line, but he was kind of played more off of the left in this game. I thought, yeah, there was a, especially in the move that results in the penalty where they score from. Another couple of decent moves from Ross County. So that was the main thing that really caught my eye. I was pretty impressed with the way that he's managed to sort of change their style of play over the pre-season. Definitely been hard at work at that.
Yeah, well, I actually thought it was another thing where they came up against a three at the back formation, and they did actually make it pay. In the wide areas, Ross County. I think Connor Randall got forward a fair bit, and Lee Irwin helped him on that side. So, what you're saying about Ross Stewart playing off the left, he's got a little bit more mobility than perhaps a striker that Derek McInnes normally would eye up. But showed a lot of quality in this game. Obviously, he scores a penalty, but I thought his general involvement was very good, and some of the moves they put together were quite impressive, actually.
Yeah, I was impressed. I thought that the other thing with Stuart is actually he worked very hard. He was playing off that left hand side, and he put in a big shift defensively to help out the debutant Reed, left back, who I thought was quite impressive. We went into, when we did our, was it just last week we did our preview for Ross County?
Yeah,
we talked about the left back, and based off of that game, you know, I think that it's not such a big concern anymore, because I thought he was tremendous. Jake Hasty got absolutely no change out of him. A little later on, when Seedorf came on, he struggled a little bit more with him. But I thought he looked impressive, both defensively and supporting going forward. I was overall impressed with Ross County. They looked stronger defensively. I think that the players they've signed have improved them. It's the exception, they're in a similar position to St Mirren, with the exception of Cole Donaldson. You know, they had three of that back four making debuts, and even then Cole Donaldson only played a couple of games before the break anyway. So for that kind of inexperienced back four in terms of playing with each other to come up against what is a good Motherwell side and keep a clean sheet. And okay, yeah, with the penalty. But other than that, Motherwell didn't create all too much. They severely limited Motherwell going forward. So it's definitely bright signs to begin with defensively for Ross County.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was that one chance for Chris Long where he hit the post, but generally I thought Iacovitti was quite impressive, and Josh Reid looked like he could contribute going forward as well.
So the penalty, one of the big talking points of the game. Opinions on that? Open up.
I thought it was a stick on.
Yeah, I thought when I first saw it, it looked like he won the ball, but I think he just goes in with way too much force that's required in that sort of tackle, and that's what makes the referee's mind up.
It's pretty needless, I think, as well.
Yeah. I guess we'll kind of just run through the big decisions then. The Motherwell penalty, I think this one is maybe a wee bit more debatable, but when there's a certain camera angle I've seen from behind the goal, and I think it's Cole Donaldson has a big handful of Jordan White's shirt, and I mean, by the letter of the law, you can't be doing that anywhere on the pitch. So
it's one that looks really soft until you see it from that angle, but even then, it's, we've said with Gallagher, this is even more needless.
Yeah,
because the ball's gone behind Jordan White anyway. There's no need to pull his shirt, and once you pull his shirt and do that, and with the linesman at that side, you're just asking for the referee to give up a penalty, and it's one of the worst penalties I've seen. It's so bad for Liam Donnelly, who scored a fair number of penalties last year and is in my fantasy team.
Yeah, I was quite surprised when he stepped up and made that much of a mess of it.
starting the season in stark contrast to how he started last. But yeah, actually on the penalty for me, this is a stick on as well as the first.
Yeah, and then the final, well, I guess this isn't controversial at all, but the big decisions is the straight red card for Callum Lang. I think this is absolutely wild. I have no idea what he's thinking. He's obviously trying to take one for the team, isn't he? But I mean, just taking one for the team and then just, yeah. I think that's what you said in the group chat last night, like, Harry, is just taking one for the team and then just wiping out your opponent.
I mean, there's ways to take one for the team. He's just thrown himself into the challenge there. All he needs to do is pull his shoulder a little bit. He's not going to get sent off for that, but that's absolutely brainless from Callum Lang. And I think that's potentially going to hurt him going forward, because obviously there's plenty of competition for places for Motherwell. And to get back in the team is going to be difficult.
I actually thought he really should have scored a header coming in from the back post. But kind of just finishing off on this game, I guess, just for the length we've run here. A bit quite questionable team selection from Stephen Robinson, but I think at least in his post-match interview, he admitted he got it wrong, which is sort of... It's always a bit of a reassurance that he's not being quite not, maybe ignorance not right the right word, but he knows he made a mistake. He knows he's made a mistake. He can hold his hands up, but I don't think I'd be sort of completely doubting Robinson's managerial ability on that decision.
The big one was obviously David Turnbull playing wide, which seemed a little bit baffling. The other ones, obviously, no Alan Campbell at all, which I was quite surprised at. But for me, the big one was having David Turnbull playing out wide. Really didn't get the best out of him. I easily think you could have dropped someone like Mark O'Hara and started Seedorf, who came on and was really effective.
Yeah, I thought he looked brilliant when he came on.
Whereas Hasty was fairly rotten, which won't go down well among some Motherwell fans who maybe aren't too happy that he's back. The other point was Regan Charles Cook had a chance towards the end to put it beyond doubt, and I think he maybe just got a bit excited and totally fluffed his lines.
Just quickly, I was just going to say, obviously Motherwell did get it wrong. I think, to be fair, this is a similar situation to Livingston. They don't need to panic too much, because despite the fact that he initially set it up wrong, which I can only assume he's put Turnbull out wide to kind of accommodate Liam Polworth.
I think you can play them both, to be honest, and have a holding midfielder like Donnelly.
Yeah, to be honest, it would have, to me, Liam Polworth's more comfortable out wide than Turnbull, but having said that, they still were very much in the game, very easily could have got something from the game, so they don't need to panic, and I don't think that the criticism needs to go too far overboard.
Yeah, definitely. So just to finish off the podcast, we'll look.
The only other thing I think was that their fullbacks were really, really poor. They offered next to nothing going forward. They both do seem, I mean, I know Liam Grimshaw is basically kind of a right back hole in midfielder, but he seemed more like a kind of a cumbersome centre back playing a right back yesterday. And of course, that David De Gea acknowledges his doppelganger in Stuart Kettlewell.
I know, just kind of picture him watching the game would be quite funny. But yeah, just to finish off the podcast, give a shout out to, I think it's Craig Forrester, Team CF123, who's leading our fantasy football league with a massive score of 107 points. And that's, well, largely down to triple captaining Odson Edward, picking him up 48 points, which... should have been a no-brainer.
Someone forgot to captain him altogether.
Yeah, I at least captained him, but triple captain probably was the way to go.
Going into Sunday, I was seventh, and I'm now 179th.
Oh, wow. Alan McGregor with a clean sheet, that's a pretty decent pick. Someone have actually subbed in or transferred in this for this weekend. Richard Tate as well, the clean sheet, the goal, a yellow card which took a minus point, but still a 12 point haul's not too bad. He did play his bench boost, which got him 7 points for Joe Shaughnessy, but there was only one extra point with that from a short 11 minute spell from Tony Watt. But yeah, fair play to you, Craig. You're leading by, I think it's 15 points. 15 points, yeah. Highest of the Pints and Pens alumni is Mikey, just kind of searching here for McGinn and Tonic.
He's got 72, I believe.
72 points, so he is sat in 43rd place. So, yeah, fair play to him, but he captained Edward and picked Martin Boyle as his vice captain, which. Just picked him up 22 points, so I'm not going to give him too much credit.
I just flicked through, and there is in this league, 16th place with 79 points. There is no chance in hell. FPL Vince McMahon.
which position was that? Did you say
16th?
Nice one. Along with Andre Blackman, the Giant. Quite like that one. But just imagine that the chairman of the board sat in our fantasy football league. But yeah, I guess we'll kind of round things off there. It's obviously great to have the football back, the real football. So we'll look forward to next weekend. Might even touch on the Rangers Europa League game, which is due on is it Thursday or Friday that's due to be played? I've kind of lost my
date. Thursday, I think.
Thursday.
Yeah, it's Thursday because Rangers have been Sunday against the
Yeah, that's right. So, obviously, keep an eye on the Twitter for any sort of transfer updates that we'll keep you posted with, and any sort of updates on the scores or whatever, if you need us to do that or relying on us to find out what the scores are on the ground. But, yeah. As ever, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.